Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 251 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing really well.
Good.
You and I just had a couple of Penn Station subs to fuel us for this Pee Wee Gaskins part two. You
did.
And you know I need my fuel, man.
You do.
If I don't have my fuel, I grind to a halt.
Really quick.
Very quickly. So before we jump into this episode, though, we have an episode out on True Crime All the Time Unsolved. We're talking about the Watcher of Westfield, and this is a very fascinating case. It was supposed to come out last Sunday, but due to some technical difficulties with some companies that we work with, it didn't happen. But I think, Gibbs, this is one that people are really going to latch onto.
Yeah, this one's really fascinating. It's got a lot of twists and turns, and you know, just so much going on in this one that I don't even want to say anything more about it.
Want to give the details away, right? Because people, we want them to experience it. The lie detector machine, the polygraph, is in.
Uh-oh.
So for those that don't know, on Patreon, we're getting ready to hook Gibby up to a polygraph machine.
Should be exciting.
It's going to be on video and audio. I think it'll be better on video. But so if you're on Patreon, check that out. If you're not, now's a great time to sign up. Gibbs, let's give our shout outs. For Patreon, we had Derek Bowie.
Hey, Derek.
Michelle Gonzalez.
What's going on, Michelle?
Dodie Styles.
Hey, thank you, Dodie.
James Davis.
What's happening, James?
Desiree Moscato.
Hey, Moscato.
Kelly Turcotte.
Hey, thank you, Kelly.
Kaylee Banks.
What's going on, Banks?
Marika.
Hey, Marika.
Devin Sizemore.
Hey, appreciate that, Sizemore.
John Marks jumped out at our highest level.
Man, thanks, John.
Catherine Carney.
Hey, Catherine.
Amanda Mansfield.
What's up, Mansfield?
Katie.
Good old Katie.
Andrea Zoshak.
Ooh, the Zoshak.
Don't mess with the Zoshak.
Exactly.
Kyle Ann Cantley.
Hey, what's going on, Kyle Ann?
Rachel Conrad.
Hey, Rachel.
Cassandra Ryan.
Thank you, Cassandra.
Muckin Fungrel.
Well, muckin you too.
You're gonna mess it up. Chuck done. Smith.
Hey, Chuck.
Callie Durden.
What's going on, Callie?
Edward Overbay.
Well, hello, Overbay.
And last but not least, Gary Wood.
What up, Wood?
And then if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Jennifer Young.
Hey, Jennifer.
So we appreciate all that Patreon support, new and the people that continue to support us. We had some great PayPal donations as well from Yvette Burchell.
Hey, Yvette.
Aubrey Eldridge.
What's going on, Eldridge?
Christy Blake.
Hey, Christy.
And Stacy Bowman.
What's up, Bowman?
All right, Gibbs, I got to ask you the question, man. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
And I'm very ready for this one.
So in this episode, obviously it's part two of the Pee Wee Gaskins story. In part one, we covered his early life, his lengthy criminal record before he ever became a serial killer, his first murders, and his infamous coastal kill. In this part two, we'll discuss what Pee-wee called his serious murders, how he finally got caught after years of killing, and his execution in 1991. Now, Pee-wee was only convicted of and sentenced for 8 murders, but the police know he had at least 14 confirmed victims, 7 women, 5 men, a toddler, and an unborn baby.
And we know that number's on the low end.
Yeah, I think most people probably believe it is. I mean, we talked about it in the first episode that he has admitted to, 80 to 100 murders. Is that correct? No, most people probably think that's on the high end. Could it be somewhere between 14 and 80? Absolutely could.
Yeah.
So Pee-wee was paroled in November of 1968. As we talked about in the last episode, he claims to have started committing his coastal kills in 1969. To the residents of Prospect, Pee-wee seemed like a reformed man, right? He was doing some roofing. We talked about that. The problem was he wasn't reformed and he was unwilling to turn away from a life of crime. What he did was basically create a new criminal enterprise.
Like Boardwalk Empire?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Probably not as successful.
Yes.
His friends stole cars from North Charleston and brought them to Pee-wee's home in Prospect for him to resell. Pee-wee was known for driving a black hearse with a sign on it that read, "I haul dead bodies." What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
Not real respectful. Right now, he's not working at a funeral home. Obviously, no respectable funeral home would put that sign on their hearse.
No, I think he was kind of bragging the fact that he had his own private cemetery.
Well, maybe if he killed 80 to 100 people, he could have possibly had his own private cemetery.
Could have.
That nobody knew about. But I think everyone in town thought it was a joke, right? Most people brushed Pee-wee off as mentally disturbed. I think a lot of people just tried to avoid him altogether. Definitely the residents of Prospect in Florence, South Carolina, thought that Pee-wee Gaskins was a strange, sometimes scary man, but they knew if they left him alone, he wouldn't do them any harm. They had no idea he was becoming a serial killer. So Gibbs, I mean, one of the things that kind of jumps out at me is, does every town have somebody that is kind of like this? I know in the town that I grew up in, there was a gentleman, he was probably in his late 20s to early 30s, and he walked around the city, the town, I lived in a pretty small town, shirtless all the time. It got cold sometimes.
Sure.
Shirtless.
Yeah.
He was obviously mentally impaired.
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt about that, but, I can remember people talking about him all the time in terms of, well, he's harmless, just don't mess with him, leave him alone. I think I can remember my parents saying things like that. If he's on this side of the sidewalk, get across the street to the other side, just because they really didn't know him. They didn't know what was going on with him.
Right. Didn't know the backstory.
Yeah. Didn't know, his family or what was going on.
I think you could find that in a lot of communities.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of communities have an individual, whether that person that, has mental health issues or they're just kind of in their own realm.
Yeah.
Doing their own thing, but sometimes maybe giving off a scary vibe to certain people.
Sure. Yeah.
In November 1970, Pee-wee killed what he later termed to be his first serious murder victims, his niece and her friend. Pee-wee killed 15-year-old Janice Kirby and 17-year-old Patricia Alsberg. Janice had run away from home with Patricia. Pee-wee found the girls and lured them into an abandoned house. He tried and failed to rape both of them, so he beat them to death in retaliation.
He's attacking his own kin.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it a little bit at the end of the last episode. These murder victims, what he calls his serious murder victims, a lot of them were known to him. You know, a lot of these people we're going to talk about, he had a beef with for one reason or another. According to Pee-wee, he found Janice and Patricia drunk and high. He was extremely angry at Janice and killed her in a fit of rage. Now, he killed Patricia because she was a witness. In a prison interview, he said, "They was both under drugs bad, and I started in on them about it, and we had a fight in there, and I beat them to death with my fist and hand." He buried Patricia in a septic tank, but couldn't bear to put his niece in there. He took her to Prospect and buried her in a field. He told Janice's family, which would have been his family, that she and Patricia ran away from home. So you got to break this down a little bit, right? Killed his niece in a fit of rage. Okay. Was it because she was high, she was on drugs, or was it because he tried to rape both of these girls and they resisted him, right? So some conflicting information here.
Right.
But the part about him not being able to bury his niece in a septic tank, you know, had to bury her out in the field.
So now he has a little, what, emotional attachment or something?
A code, a morality. Right. I don't know what you call it. Didn't kick in when he murdered her.
No.
But kicked in after death somehow.
So now he's got a conscience.
Yeah. A few weeks later, Pee-wee found out that Martha Dix was the woman who had sold drugs to the girls. He later confessed, "That night, Janice and Patricia died. I promised after it was over that Martha Ann would never live a year after that." Now, Martha is referred to as Clyde in some of the sources because she was known for dressing like a man. Pee-wee killed Martha for selling drugs to the girls and may also have killed her because she was pregnant with his child. So there are rumors and allegations that Martha allegedly participated in a threesome with Pee-wee and his wife, Donna. She got pregnant and began telling people it was Pee-wee's child.
And there's a lot going on right now.
There is. There is a lot going on. But Pee-wee invited Martha to a junkyard to pick out a car. And then he gave her a Coke laced with acid and watched her slowly die from the poison. He later said, "I gave her the Coca-Cola and she drank that and she tried to scream. She turned it up to her head and next thing I know, the bottle hit the floor." According to the state, after this, Pee-wee loaded her body up and flipped her over in a ditch.
So we knew he was upset about her selling drugs to his niece and her friend. And it sounds like he might have been upset about her telling the town about her carrying his baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely sounds like that. But think about standing in front of someone, Gibbs, you hand them a Coke, knowing that there's acid in it. They drink the Coke and you are watching them face to face as they die.
Yeah. Struggling to breathe.
That's a brutal, brutal way to go. You know, is it the exact same as wrapping your hands around someone's neck and watching the life go out of them? Maybe not the same because you're not hands-on, but it's still very intimate. You're close. You know, you're not a sniper shooting someone from 300 yards away.
Yeah, he didn't say, "I gave her the Coke and walked away."
Yes, and she died hours later.
Right.
It sounded like he stood there and watched as she died. After Martha, there are several victims that are unconfirmed. Pee-wee confessed to killing these people, but was never charged for murdering them. Pee-wee claimed to have killed a woman named Ann Culberson. Ann was hitchhiking to Atlanta, and Pee-wee said he picked her up. He raped and tortured her for 4 days and buried her near his niece, Janice. So, you know, we kind of talked about, well, maybe he did have his own private cemetery. Okay, if you're burying multiple people in the same field, in the same spot, it's almost like you are starting up your own private cemetery. Pee-wee killed a man named Eddie Brown after he purchased some stolen weapons from him. I guess federal agents started tracking Eddie, and Pee-wee thought that Eddie was going to snitch on him. He also confessed to killing Bertie Brown, Eddie's wife. So again, right, we talked about it. A lot of these later murders that he dubbed his serious murders, they weren't exactly like before. They weren't all strangers. They weren't just people he met and decided he wanted to kill. It's almost as if he had some, in his mind, reasons for killing these people. Pee-wee picked up another hitchhiker named Jackie Freeman. He raped and murdered her. He later told the police the location of her body, but said she was Janice because he didn't want them to find his private cemetery, Gibbs.
So there you go.
Now, we're going back and forth, it seems like, right? He's murdering people that he has issues with, but at the same time, he is still picking up random hitchhikers.
Yeah.
With whom it seems as though he has no connection whatsoever.
And we know he's going to kill him because earlier he said that he was never going to go back to prison again.
Yeah, I think he made that decision, as a lot of killers do at some point during their reign of terror, right? Especially the ones that have been caught multiple times. It seems like a lot of them, Gibbs, come to the conclusion that the reason why they're getting caught is because they're leaving people alive to tell the authorities about them, identify them. All right, I can't let that happen anymore.
Right.
Pee-wee's next confirmed victims were 23-year-old Doreen Dempsey, Doreen's 2-year-old daughter Robin, and Doreen's unborn baby. Doreen lived near Pee-wee, and she kind of thought of him as a friend. She had even lived with him and his wife Donna on a previous occasion. Doreen was 7 months pregnant, and she didn't want to walk the long distance to the bus station, so she had her friends drop her off at Pee-wee's house so that she could ask him for a ride. He agreed. But at some point, he got very angry with Doreen when he found out that the father of her baby was black. He later said, Gibbs, quote, "When you go to mixing, I don't hold with that one bit in the world." Okay, that's terrible English.
It really is.
But obviously we know he didn't spend a lot of time in school. What did he drop out at 11 years old? I think it was. So, you know, we're not expecting him to have Gibby level type English / grammar skills. It's just not going to happen.
No way, man.
Now, Pee-wee said, you know, he already disapproved of Robin because she was half black. And he was angry that Doreen was going to have another mixed race child. So not only is he a rapist, killer, all of that. Obviously, this was a man who was extremely racist as well.
Yeah, on top of all that.
Pee-wee took Doreen to the pond behind his home where he raped and drowned her. He later told the state, "I was going to talk with her." And she was about 7 months pregnant at the time again. And so I asked her who the daddy of the kid was that she was carrying right then, and it was another black kid from what she told me. We went on around to the fish pond, and we walked around the edge, and I just shoved her right in the pond and grabbed her by the feet and held her under, and then I went back and got the kid and done the same thing. So he killed a 23-year-old woman, drowned her.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Pregnant woman.
Pregnant, 7 months pregnant, then went and got her 2-year-old daughter and had no issues with doing the exact same thing to her. I mean, hopefully everybody is getting the picture of Pee-wee Gaskins. This was a man who had no qualms at all, Gibbs, about killing anyone. Now, you know, killing's wrong, right? You and I talk about that all the time. There are some killers who have a code. Does that make it right? No, obviously not. But there are some killers who, you know, have said they won't kill children. That's not Pee-wee Gaskins.
No.
He doesn't care who he murders. Gibbs, he later admitted to raping both of them. He raped and drowned a 2-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Can you be any more of a monster than that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's already raped a pregnant woman, drowned that pregnant woman, and then raped her daughter and drowned her.
2 years old.
Yeah.
And he also admitted to cutting off and eating a part of Doreen's leg. So I think we touched on it in the first episode, right? Possibly a little cannibalism in the crimes of Pee-wee Gaskins. Well, it comes in here. In 1973, the year that I was born, Pee-wee befriended ex-convict Walter Neely, who worked at the roofing company with him. Walter was said to have some mental health issues, and Pee-wee thought that this would be a guy who would be easy to control. So one night after killing 3 people, Pee-wee's van broke down on the highway. He called Walter for help with moving the bodies to his garage. And Walter would continue to help Pee-wee bury bodies, destroy evidence, and even fence some stolen goods from the murder victims.
So great. Now he's got a buddy helping him out.
Yeah. And you just look back on it and you think, you know, how severe were these mental health issues? How pliable? You know, we touched on it, right? Pee-wee Gaskins was a master manipulator. He found this guy, Walter, and thought he's perfect.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll be able to get him to do whatever I want him to do.
And that he did.
It sounds like he did. In June 1974, Pee-wee killed 36-year-old Johnny Sellers and 22-year-old Jesse Ruth Judy. Johnny and Jesse lived together in Charleston. Now, Johnny owed Pee-wee money for getting him out of jail, and he agreed to split the proceeds from a stolen boat. But the fence didn't want to pay Johnny and told Pee-wee to just get rid of him. So Pee-wee invited Johnny to the woods to retrieve some stolen goods.
So right there, if you knew Pee-wee's reputation, would you be like, yeah, let's go meet in those woods? I think that would have been a red flag.
Or would you have done anything you could do to scrape together the money to get this guy out of your life? The state later reported that Pee-wee said, me and Johnny walked around there in the woods and I pretended I seen a snake. And I asked Johnny, did he have his gun with him? So Johnny says, I ain't got no bullets for my gun. I went back to my car and I got my gun and I shot Johnny. Pee-wee left his body in the woods to go get Jesse from the fence's house.
I mean, if you think about his question there, how smart was that? You just learned that the guy that you potentially wanted to kill didn't have a weapon that he could use to defend himself because he didn't have any bullets.
Pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
On the part of Pee-wee Gaskins. I shouldn't use the word smart, but he is displaying some wits about him as he goes along. He said, I told Jesse that Johnny said for her to come on with me. So I carried her back there and killed her. And then I buried him. Pee-wee said that he stabbed her in the heart. But Gibbs, he later said he felt guilty for killing Jesse because they had had sex in the past. And that statement really surprises me.
Sure.
That this kind of guy would feel guilty about really anything that he did in his life.
It's kind of like right up there with him not wanting to bury his niece in a septic system.
Yeah. Kind of at odds with who you think this guy is or was. In the fall of 1974, Pee-wee decided to murder 2 carnival workers named Linda and Jeanette. But Gibbs, the reason why he wanted to kill them was because he'd heard that they had dated black men in the past. That's his reason.
Yep, just right there. He's got a problem with race.
He does. No, there's no doubt about it. He is a full-blown racist. He claimed to have shot both women in the head, but he was never charged for their murders. Pee-wee confessed to killing a man named Horace Jones for making a sexual advance on his wife. Now, Gibbsy said he was willing to trade his wife for a service. But Horace, quote, went about it the wrong way.
Okay, there was
a certain way that Pee-wee thought this should have gone down. Yes, okay. I'm willing to trade my wife for some service.
Right.
But you're going to do it this way.
Yeah, don't you be going around the back door on me on this.
Don't mess with the rules of etiquette in the sexual favor exchange. He shot Horace 3 times. Now, Pee-wee was never charged for this murder either. So Horace is an unconfirmed victim. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least 2 dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS. In February 1975, Pee-wee was hired as a hitman by a woman named Suzanne Kipper. She paid Pee-wee $1,500 to kill her ex-boyfriend, Silas Yates. Is that a lot of money to kill someone?
I was just thinking the same thing. This doesn't seem like a lot of money, even back in the 70s.
Well, what would $1,500 equate to today? Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop.
Maybe like 18,
20,000. Okay, maybe. I was thinking 10 or something. Yeah. But yeah, you could be right. I think it's somewhere in that range. Can you imagine if someone came up to you and said, hey, I know you have a special set of skills, which you do.
Sure.
I want you to kill someone for $8,000, $10,000. Now, you would turn them down for any amount of money. I know that.
Okay.
Because you don't do it for money.
I don't.
But, you know, in all seriousness, think about $8,000. Think about $10,000.
Right off the top, you got to give half to the government.
You're gonna claim that?
Yeah.
I just can't imagine, you know, selling your soul like that for that amount of money, let alone any amount of money, but it's just such a small amount.
Well, and the risk involved, right?
Sure.
If you get caught, you could get life in prison or worse.
There's that. And then let's say you never get caught. You still know that you killed someone. Yeah. Now, if you're peeweed, it doesn't make any difference. Right. You've killed a number of people. I'm talking more about, you know, your neighbor or your friend, and you go to that person and say, I really need this person to go away. Will you do it for $8,000? No.
It's going to be a big no, and you better be ready for somebody to show up later saying, hey, I heard you might need a hitman.
Let's talk about it in my wired car.
Exactly.
So Silas Yates left his family in 1973 and started dating Suzanne. Their relationship ended, and Silas demanded that Suzanne return all the gifts he bought her. Well, Suzanne didn't take kindly to that, right? She didn't want to give back the gifts that she'd been given during this relationship. So she and her friend, John Philip Owens, hired a man named John Powell to kill Silas. John Powell knew Pee-wee Gaskins and hired him to help with the job. John Powell and John Owens handled the communications between Pee-wee and Suzanne. So essentially it sounded like they were middlemen.
So if I was a train killer, I would say this has too many layers already.
Well, there's a lot of moving pieces here. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who can later implicate me in this. Right. Yeah, there's too much going on. Pee-wee also decided to involve Walter and his wife, Diane Neely. So we're back to Walter, right? He knows he can get Walter to do just about anything he wants him to do. It was on February 12th, 1975, that Diane Neely lured Silas Yates out of his house by asking him for help with some car problems. Pee-wee ambushed Silas and kidnapped him. He stole about $2,100 worth of items from the house while Silas was trapped in the trunk of the car. And then afterwards, he drove Silas to the woods to kill him. Diane, Powell, and Owens helped bury him. And I guess Pee-wee bragged to everyone that he killed Silas with his bare hands. But later, the autopsy showed that he died from stab wounds.
So he's just full of bullshit.
Yeah, I think he was across the board. But what is he trying to say, right? Let's not forget, Pee-wee's not a big guy. We talked about that. That's why he's called Pee-wee.
Right.
But I'm puffing myself up. I'm bragging to you. I'm making you think that I'm more than what I am. I killed this man with my bare hands.
Well, he needs to, right? Just like he did when he went to prison. He took out the biggest, baddest dude. So he had that reputation in prison to not be messed with.
But Gibbs, just as we talked about, there were too many moving parts. There were too many people involved in this. Diane Neely and her new boyfriend, Avery Howard, decided that they wanted to blackmail Pee-wee Gaskins. Okay, number one on the list of bad things to do is try to blackmail Pee-wee.
Not a good thing.
When you already know that this guy is a killer, you don't know the full extent, right? None of these people probably do, but you know he has no problem killing.
So why would you want to even take that chance?
No. Why risk it? In April 1975, they did just that. They asked for $5,000 in exchange for not going to police. Pee-wee agreed, and he arranged a meeting for the payout. And to me, Gibbs, this right there, it should have been the biggest red flag. We asked for five. Pee-wee agreed to pay the five. No haggling. No, he didn't even try to get us down to half or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And the other flag or siren that should have went off was when he said, let's meet in the woods to handle this business.
Yeah, because at that meeting, he killed them both and buried their bodies. But again, I go back to, how do you not know that this is going to happen? How can you not figure out that you're taking a huge risk of trying to blackmail a killer, a person who has had no problem killing in the past? What's going to stop this person from just killing you? And you know what the answer is? Nothing. Nothing stopped him. Pee-wee claimed that night he gave one of his friends a knife and left the area. When he returned, he found Diane and Avery dead in their car. He said he only shot them in the head for good measure. So this friend has never been found. I think most people don't believe that he even exists.
Right.
It was Pee-wee.
Yeah. It's just his way of saying, I didn't kill him.
Right.
I put him out of their misery. When I found them, that's what I did.
Just wanted to make sure they were dead, so I shot them in the head.
Didn't want them to suffer.
But in later interviews, Pee-wee said he killed Diane and Avery because she was cheating on Walter with Avery. And Walter's kind of his buddy, right? His go-to guy. But he waffled back and forth on this. At certain times he said, well, I didn't really have all that much problem with the affair. And it did come out that he actually allowed the couple to use his workshop to have sex in. So how much could he have really been bothered by the affair? It was when Diane threatened to, you know, report him. When she blackmailed him, he had to kill them both.
Well, sure. Look, he said he was never going to go back to prison.
Yeah, that's a good point. So not only are you making the decision that you're not going to leave any of your victims alive, you also can't leave any cohorts alive, especially if they're making, you know, those type of threats of, you know, turning you in.
Yeah.
Shortly after this, Pee-wee murdered 13-year-old Kim Gelkins. And ultimately, this would be the murder that led to his arrest. In September 1975, Kim showed up to Pee-wee's home. He allowed her to stay with him and his wife. Kim was a young runaway, and she quickly bonded with Pee-wee's daughter, Shirley. But soon after she moved in, Kim made claims that Pee-wee and two other friends raped her. Wayne Gibbs is not too hard to believe that he would do this. Go back to episode one. He raped a number of young girls, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds.
Well, he had no problem raping his own niece, so.
Yeah. So, you know, she made this claim. If you had to bet money on it, you would say more likely than not, it's definitely true, right? But again, she's threatening him. She's threatening his freedom, and Pee-wee can't have that. So he kind of cooked up this little vacation and was going to take Kim along. But what he ended up doing was he took her to a trailer. He raped and tortured her, and then he killed her. He shot her in the back of the head, stabbed her in the stomach, and buried her body in a field. And Pee-wee later admitted that when Kim denied his sexual advances, that's when he killed her.
So he was upset because a 13-year-old said no. He decided he was going to do whatever he wanted anyway, and then killed her.
I think that was his thing, right? Now, why he wanted to do that, that's what I struggle with. Why would any grown man want to do that? Why would anyone want to kill someone? I struggle with the whys of these things that he did, but there's no doubt that he wanted to do them, and there was really nothing that was going to stand in his way of him doing what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't care about the age of his victims, right? I mean,
no.
Robin was 2.
If anything, it suggests that he was sexually attracted to very young girls, you know, in this 11, 12, 13-year-old age range. In 1975, Pee-wee brought Walter Neely back in on some of his murders. These were the murders of half-brothers, 28-year-old Dennis Bellamy, and 15-year-old Johnny Knight. And it was this bringing Walter back in that would later backfire on Pee-wee. But these two guys, Bellamy and Knight, they made the mistake of robbing Pee-wee's auto repair shop. And apparently Pee-wee liked Johnny, but he hated Dennis. And they'd hated each other since about 1971. When Dennis got drunk and started to fight at Pee-wee's house. And this is something we haven't talked about, but it comes out in the research. Apparently, Pee-wee didn't approve of drunkenness. And he later bragged that the reason why his hair stayed so dark for so long was because of his, quote, clean living.
Oh, he was living the clean life, wasn't
yeah.
he?
So, drunkenness bad. Rape, torture, murder, I'm totally fine with that.
Right, yeah. No problems there.
You see how bizarre that is?
Yeah, he's just so messed up.
Where you're drawing the line is at open drunkenness. I can't abide that. The other stuff, do whatever you want. It just blows me away. And to say that he was living the clean life.
Like a hypocrite on the highest level, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So on October 10th, 1975, Pee-wee took both men out to the woods and killed them. Dennis and Johnny showed up to Pee-wee's house late that night. Dennis was drunk, which made Pee-wee angry. He offered Dennis a ride, and at some point, he stopped in the woods. Pee-wee got out of the car, telling Dennis he had to use the bathroom. Dennis followed him into the woods. The men stopped at a tree where Pee-wee asked Dennis about a tree limb that they could possibly use to string up a car engine. And it was when Dennis looked up that Pee-wee shot him in the head 3 times.
Yeah, so I think if you get anything out of this, if someone asks you to go into the woods, it should always be, no, thank you.
What if you want to go bird watching?
No, thank you.
Okay. So you're drawing the line at just no woods whatsoever.
Exactly.
I wasn't sure why, if Pee-wee had to pee, Johnny had to go with him.
Well, it could have been one of those things. Hey, man, I got to take a piss really quick. You know what? I think I'll go with you and do one too.
Oh, I got two too? Okay. Yeah. See, I was having like a something about Mary 6 minute abs thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where he said, oh, I'm just peeing. Everybody else pops up and said, hey, I'm just peeing too.
I'm just peeing too, buddy. Yeah.
Later that night, Pee-wee and Walter took Johnny through the woods. They were getting close to Dennis's body. So Pee-wee figured that he might as well kill Johnny because he'd already killed his brother, Dennis. So he's got Walter with him, right? And Walter witnessed Johnny's murder, helped Pee-wee bury both of the bodies. Afterwards, Pee-wee showed Walter where he buried some of the other bodies, what he called his private cemetery.
I think a lot of these guys and people, victims, I think a lot of these victims were okay going into the woods with Pee-wee because of his personality, his stature, right? I mean, they weren't like worried, I don't believe.
Not from a physical altercation standpoint. I agree, right? We said it in episode one, his unassuming stature kind of allowed him to get away with some things that maybe he wouldn't have been able to if he was 6'5", 280.
Right.
But he wasn't, right? He was small. He was a small guy. So I think you're right. A lot of people probably were a little easy with their guard, right? Letting it down because they thought, what's this guy going to do to me?
Right.
Well, he's going to shoot you in the head 3 times. That's what he's going to do to you.
They just weren't aware how calculating he could be.
Yeah.
Multiple steps ahead of what was
going to
happen.
And he had to be because he wasn't going to overpower anybody. So he had to think things out, plan things out, or at the very least get you when you weren't looking and kind of set it up that way. Pee-wee attracted the police's attention when 13-year-old Kim Gelkins was reported missing. Kim's teacher, Marianne Dullum, reported her missing after Kim's sister told her that she never returned from a trip to the country with a neighbor. Mrs. Dullum recalled that when Kim completed an assignment about her summer vacation, she said the person she most admired was Donna Gaskins, Pee-wee's wife. So police went to the trailer owned by Donna and Pee-wee, but no one was home. They did find some of Kim's clothing inside the trailer, but no signs of Pee-wee or Donna. So this is kind of interesting when you have a young child, right, that goes missing. Okay, naturally, I think the police are going to go talk to their teacher. And this teacher just happened to remember some writing where she talked about this woman named Donna Gaskins.
And thankfully, she did.
Yeah. I found it very fascinating. But police didn't find Donna and Pee-wee, so they went to go talk to Walter Neely. They picked him up for questioning. And I don't think, Gibbs, it took police very long to break him down. Remember, Walter had some mental health issues. maybe some mental deficiencies. I think both. So from what I understand, as soon as the police threatened him with the death penalty, Walter panicked and he spilled everything. He even took them to a place called Alligator Landing. And it was there that police found Doreen's body buried in a sawdust pile. Robin's body had been stuffed into a tree stump hole. Remember, she was only 2 years old.
Yeah. Yep. Tiny.
Sad. On November 20th, 1975, Pee-wee was found at his Prospect home and arrested for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. At that time, they couldn't charge him with Kim's murder because they had not found her body. He denied everything. He refused to give them any information, but it was Walter Neely who told the police about the private graveyard out in the Florence wilderness.
Game changer.
Huge. And digging started on December 4th, 1975, in a wooded grove near a cornfield in Prospect. The police found three bodies the very first night. And I think it was at that point, Gibbs, when police found these graves, that they knew Pee-wee Gaskins was a serial killer.
And just days later, on December 6th, they found three more bodies.
Yeah, so at that point, there's no doubt, right? You've got six bodies buried in the same location. We got a serious problem. And we have a serious serial killer on our hands. Among the bodies were Johnny Sellers, Jesse Judy, Avery Howard, Diane Neely, Johnny Knight, and Dennis Bellamy. On April 27th, 1976, Pee-wee and Walter Neely were charged with the murder of Dennis Bellamy. They went to trial on May 23rd. And what I found interesting, Gibbs, was that Pee-wee's family testified against him. They had some information about his private graveyard, his gun collection. He even had some tools for digging graves. Okay. Not looking great against you. Let's not forget you drive around in a hearse,
right,
that says I haul dead bodies.
But if you're his family, this is your opportunity to speak up and maybe have something done so he's not there to threaten you in the future.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. You know, how scared were they of Pee-wee?
Yeah.
You know, how much did they know? I don't know the full truth on that, but let's say they knew. Maybe not the full extent, but they knew that he was doing some really bad things. They also knew that everybody who had either tried to blackmail him or turn on him ended up dead. Okay, are you going to be the next person? Probably not, but now's your chance, like right. You said.
Time to be all in on this one.
True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. So the prosecution had a ton of evidence. The defense tried to place the blame on Walter Neely, but Neely was able to negotiate a plea deal and he ended up with a life sentence. On May 28th, Pee Wee Gaskins was found guilty of murdering Dennis Bellamy and sentenced to death. In November 1976, the Supreme Court outlawed capital punishment, so Pee Wee's sentence was commuted to life in prison. And I think this was a big thing for him. Number one, he knew he wasn't going to die. And so it was at that point, Gibbs, that he started confessing to other murders. Because what else could they do to him? You can't kill me now.
Right.
So if you want to tack on 10, 20, 30 life sentences, go for it. I'm going to be here anyway.
Yeah, but he's not going to do it just out of the kindness of his heart. He wants something in return.
He does. I mean, one thing that he wanted was conjugal visits with his wife. And in exchange for that, he led authorities to three bodies. The police found Patricia Alsbrook stuffed in a septic tank on November 4th, 1976. At that point, she'd been missing for 6 years. And I have to think, Gibbs, if he doesn't give up the location, she's probably never found.
No, unlikely.
Kim Gelkins was found on November 11th, buried in a large field. On December 8th, Silas Yates' body was found about 1 mile from where Kim was buried. But they are going to try Pee-wee again, right? His second murder trial was for the murder of Silas Yates. At the trial, he initially denied murdering Silas. But in the middle of his testimony, he confessed to 5 murders. Okay, probably not the strategy that your defense was going for.
No, I'm thinking the defense is wondering, wait, you already told him where the body was. Now you're going to say you didn't have anything to do with the killing.
And then you're just going to confess to 5 murders?
Yeah.
All right, can we take a 5? I need a 5 here with my client because things are out of control. One of the murders Pee Wee confessed to was that of Peg Cutino. An Atlanta attorney named Charles King had charged Pee Wee with killing Peg, but South Carolina authorities refused to accept the charges. I think one reason was because a man named William Pierce was already in prison for the murder of Peg Cutino. And from my understanding, Gibbs, Pee-wee Gaskins was just one of about 1,500 suspects in Peg's case.
Wow, that's quite a bit.
That's a large number. It was a very high-profile murder because Peg's father was a state legislator. Pee-wee was initially questioned but released because his employer verified his alibi. Peg was seen walking past a house where Pee-wee was working on the roof, but there was no real evidence that he killed her. So right in the middle of it, right? He's just confessing to a bunch of murders, right? But they still have to continue this trial for the murder of Silas Yates. He was ultimately found guilty and sentenced to life prison on April 27th, 1977. And it was just 2 days after that trial ended that 20-year-old Martha Dick's body was found. Pee-wee led the police to her body in exchange for a plea deal. And you have to question, right? Why would Pee-wee Gaskins need to make a plea deal? He's confessing. He's got multiple life sentences already. Well, it's because I think they were threatening to charge him with other murders and seek the death penalty. Okay, well now we got a problem here. Because it seemed like he was okay with the life sentences, but he didn't want to die. And from what I understand, it was the murder of Johnny Knight that they were thinking about going after him and trying to get the death penalty. In April 1978, Pee-wee gave a written confession to 14 murders in exchange for 8 life sentences. He confessed to murdering Diane Neely, Avery Howard, Jesse Ruth Judy, Johnny Sellers, Johnny Knight, Doreen Dempsey, Robin Dempsey, Kim Gelkins, Patricia Alsbrook, Janice Kirby, and Martha Dix. He didn't receive charges for the last 4 victims because they used truth serum on him. So they got details out of him, but I guess that meant that, you know, they couldn't charge him. He also gave more details about the Yates and Bellamy murders, but in his written confession, Gaskins recanted his statements about killing Peg Coutinho. So he was kind of all over the place, right? And this statement, it wasn't like a one pager, Gibbs. It was 331 pages.
Yeah, really detailing out the murders.
Really? And the state wrote that he detailed everything out as casually as most people tell what they had for breakfast. You and I have used that type of analogy many, many times, right? It's like ordering at a restaurant or me telling you what I had for lunch yesterday. I don't know that with some of these killers, it's much more than that in the grand scheme of things for them.
It's just what they do, right?
Yeah, it's kind of everyday ho-hum type stuff, which is shocking to all of us because it's hard to understand how it could be like that. We just can't figure that out. But this was his first and only full chronological confession of his victims. After he gave it, he finally led the police to Janice's body because at this point, she'd been considered a missing person for 8 years. And is it shocking, Gibbs, that he would be the most reticent to disclose information about Janice? To me, it's not at all.
No.
You know, this was his niece. There had to have been something there that I'm not saying he felt bad about it, but maybe he didn't want his family to know. There had to have been some reason along those lines that the information about her murder was the last to come out. Or at least the, you know, for her body to be discovered.
Well, if he had any allies on his side of his family, that would have just ended all that.
And maybe that's a good point. Maybe he didn't feel bad about it at all. Maybe it was more calculated in that, hey, I need somebody to fill up my canteen.
Sure.
Account. Now I'm going to have nobody on my side.
So I'm thinking Pee-wee probably wasn't the ideal inmate.
No, he wasn't. There's no doubt about that. In 1982, Pee-wee took a paid hit job and killed a fellow inmate with a homemade explosive device.
Gotta wonder how you get the makings of a explosive device in prison.
Yeah, you would think that would be one of the priorities, right? In prison, let's not let anything in that can be turned into a bomb. The problem is we know you can use a lot of different things.
Very true.
To make some type of explosive device. A guy named Tony Simo hired Pee-wee to kill inmate Rudolph Tyner, who was 24 years old. Tyner was on death row for murdering Tony's parents, Bill and Myrtle Moon. Tyner was originally from New York, but was passing through the area. He murdered the Moons during a robbery of their store. And this Tony Simo was frustrated with the justice system and Gibbs, I think he felt as though Rudolph Tyner was never going to be executed. He didn't want to wait. He wanted to take justice into his own hands. So what Pee-wee did is he first befriended this Tyner guy. Their cells were back to back so they could talk through the vents. Pee-wee attempted several times to poison him, but for whatever reason, he wasn't affected by the poison. It was almost as if, you know, he had some, let's call them bathroom issues.
Right.
Maybe some projectile vomiting. It was almost as if he had food poisoning.
Yeah, but he survived.
Yeah, he survived. Pee-wee worked as a maintenance man in the prison, so he had access to various tools and to a number of different areas of the prison. So when the poisoning failed, Pee-wee and Tony Simo made plans to build a bomb. Pee-wee arranged a phone call, and with Tony, he used code words and false names as they were kind of coming up with this plan. In the recording, Pee-wee said, "I'll take a damned radio and rig it into a bomb, and when he plugs that son of a bitch up, it will blow him on into hell." And apparently, somehow Pee-wee recorded this call, and he planned to use it to blackmail Tony Simo. That didn't work, but what did happen is that it was later used as evidence against him. One thing I found interesting is that Pee-wee must have told his daughter Shirley about his plans, because she went to police and told them that her father was planning to kill someone. They basically dismissed her and said, "It's impossible.
Yeah, he's in prison.
He's in prison. There's no way he can build a bomb. There's no way he can blow someone up." But on September 12th, 1982, a huge explosion occurred on the death row unit. Tyner was blasted off a toilet seat in his cell by a booby-trapped radio that essentially exploded in his hands. Tom Henderson from SLED later told the state that sounded like it was right up Pee-wee's alley. So I think he knew that Pee-wee was connected right away. For one thing, Pee-wee had previously told 12th Circuit solicitor Kenneth Summerford that he liked to keep dynamite on him just in case he wanted to blow someone up.
Well, you never know.
You never know when you might need some dynamite.
Exactly.
So this guy responded, "Well, you must have had somebody in mind when you bought the dynamite." And Pee-wee reportedly said, "Well, I always had people in mind." Apparently, he had considered blowing up three or four different people, including his wife, his mother-in-law. But I think what this conversation did was it showed that Pee-wee had some knowledge of explosives, and it kind of linked him, at least somewhat, to Tyner's death. When the facts came out, it was learned that Pee-wee smuggled in plastic explosives. I have no idea how you do that.
I'm just hoping it wasn't the one way that people smuggle things in the prisons.
In a certain cavity?
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of things are smuggled in to prisons using that method. It's not the most hygienic method, but it seems to be pretty effective.
I think there should be times you just say no. You know, that's one time you should say no.
I think a lot of people should say no to a lot of things that they just don't.
Yeah, exactly.
They refuse to do. So he took these plastic explosives. He fashioned an electrical bomb to look like a radio. He instructed Tyner to walk a few yards away and press the talk button to see how the device worked. And Pee-wee pressed the button when the device was right next to his ear. And this was nasty. Tyner's head was blown off in the explosion. Parts of this radio device were found embedded in his skull, and almost all of his fingers on that hand were blown off. After the explosion, Pee-wee flushed the wire down the toilet and came out of his cell, pretending to be confused like the other inmates. So, I mean, you know, go back to this guy. Right? We talked about him dropping out of school very early. He didn't get a lot of formal education, but obviously he had some street smarts. There's no doubt about it. He learned how to manipulate people. Somehow he learned how to make this explosive device. I couldn't make an explosive device, especially in prison. I couldn't make it in my workshop here at home.
Yeah, you don't have those MacGyver skills.
I don't, but I think he did.
Well, like you said, he was a mechanic at an early age. So he had
that's true.
That fundamental
mechanical type know-how.
Yes.
Well, and let's not forget how much time he probably had on his hands. But police found the recording of Pee-wee planning to make the bomb. This was the recording that he had made. He thought he was going to blackmail Tony Simo with it. So I think, you know, essentially based on that, Gibbs, Pee-wee was found guilty of murder. And, you know, by this point, capital punishment was reinstated. He was sentenced to death. in March of 1983. And basically every few months leading up to his execution, Pee-wee told the police that he could lead them to more bodies. So, okay, maybe a little Henry Lee Lucas going on here. You give me some privileges, take me out on some trips, and I'll tell you where some bodies are buried. On one of these trips outside of the prison, Pee-wee hired someone to help him escape, but that attempt failed.
Well, we knew that he liked to try to escape a lot back in the day.
Yeah, he was actually fairly good at it. He even once made plans to kidnap a solicitor's daughter and hold her hostage in exchange for his release. But none of these promises ever led to the finding of any body. So I think pretty quickly, police stopped listening to him. Pee-wee began working on a book with his attorney, Grady Query. We kind of talked about it a little bit in episode one. After all the trials and appeals were over, Query asked him, "Pee-wee, why don't you tell me what really happened?" And this is when he just started talking. He confessed over 50 murders over a span of about 30 years between 1953 and 1982. According to the Folly Current, he told Query, "I've been over every one of them in my mind, and I don't see where I had any other choice." This statement floors me.
Sure it does.
Because to my knowledge, there's not a single murder that we've talked about where any type of self-defense was involved, any type of, you know, danger to his life. So to say that he had no other choice, it's astonishing.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have to rape and murder people. He chose that.
Well, no, according to him, he had no other choice. There was no other way to go about it, which I think is why it's so ludicrous when you say it out loud like that. From 1990 to 1991, Pee-wee worked with author Wilton Earle on his biography, Final Truth. The book was based on conversations between the two men during the last 15 months of Pee-wee's life. Pee-wee Gaskins was executed on September 6, 1991 at the Broad River Correctional Institution. Gibbs, he was only 58 years old. You think about, you know, over these past two episodes, all the things that we've detailed out and the number of years that those crimes spanned. It was a long time.
Yeah, what I think you have to look at is the fact that his crime started when he was 11 years old.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's why it seems as though, you know, he was active for so many years, which he was, but then he was executed at 58 years old, which, you know, is fairly young.
Sure.
But it's just because he started so young.
I mean, hell, he was even active in prison, right? In 1982 with that sure. bomb murder.
I don't think this guy knew anything else. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, his entire life was, how can I satisfy my urges? Where's my next victim? What can I do to get some money? It was just, you know, one thing after another. And like you said, even in prison, you want to pay me to kill somebody? Sure, I'll do that. In the hours before the execution on September 5th, Gaskins tried to take his life by slitting his wrist with a razor that he smuggled into his cell. So his execution was set for just after midnight, but that wasn't good enough for Pee-wee, right? He wanted to die on his own terms, but the suicide attempt failed. He was given medical treatment and prepped for his execution. At 1 a.m., he was strapped to the electric chair. When he was asked if he had any last words, he said, "I'll let my lawyers talk for me. I'm ready to go." The electricity was turned on at 1:04 and shut off at 1:06. He was pronounced dead at 1:10 a.m. So only 2 minutes. That's all it took.
Very quick.
A voltage, and then pronounced dead 4 minutes later. The only witness to the execution was Pee-wee's son, Donald Jr. So in a sense, that's kind of sad. Now, do you feel bad for Pee-wee Gaskins? No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But think about a person's life. What do you want it to be? When it's all said and done, Gibbs, when it's your time to go, what do you hope for? I think most people would say, you know, they hope all of their friends and family turn out to celebrate their life. Yeah, mourn their passing, but celebrate their life, right, and all of that. This guy was such a piece of garbage that the only person who was willing to show up for his execution was his son.
Yeah.
No other family, no friends, nobody. They didn't want anything to do with him. And it's kind of hard to blame him. The guy was an absolute monster.
Right.
So Gibbs, as we wrap up this case, you know, there's still a bit of mystery surrounding Pee-wee Gaskins. He's been declared a suspect in 39 murders that most likely will never be solved. You never say never. You know, when you think about South Carolina, it's a state full of small towns, a lot of friendly people. The friendliest Walmart I've ever been to was in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Now, they were slow as all get out at the customer service desk. I went to return a cooler while I was on vacation, but man, were they friendly. They just were not in a hurry.
They probably appreciate you bringing all that beer in that cooler too when you returned it.
You know, I wouldn't do that. I got to take the beer out first. When Pee-wee was arrested in 1975, I think a lot of people in South Carolina were shocked that a South Carolina native could be capable of this level of such extreme violence. And then when the book Final Truth was released, people were really shocked to read about, you know, some of the gruesome details of Pee-wee's crimes. I don't think there's any doubt in the state's history, there hasn't been another killer as evil as Pee-wee Gaskins. And for decades, he's held that reputation as the meanest man in South Carolina.
And I think he might hold on to that.
I think he might until someone else comes along. Now, you said, could he hold that in some other states? Maybe. Because again, I go back to, we really don't know the full extent of his murders.
Right.
And we say it all the time, but it is true. It's true with serial killers. You know, they embellish or they downplay. Do they forget?
Good.
Some murders. If you've killed 20, 30, 40 people, is it inconceivable that you might forget about some? I don't think it is. But that's it, Gibbs, for our episodes on Pee-wee Gaskins. He was a special kind of evil. I'll say that. We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Let's hear those.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. This is Stephanie from Durham, North Carolina, by way of Queens, New York. I was just listening to the most recent episode regarding Pee-wee Gaskins. And when Gibby asked Mike if he knew the movie where the guy said, it just mean, it blew my mind because I remember that movie. It was Payback with Mel Gibson. Anyway, I love you guys. These are stories that I may have heard before, but I love the spin you put on it. You guys are hilarious. I'm Team Mike and Team Gibby, and I love listening to your podcast. The first podcast I listen to when I come to work every Monday morning. So just keep doing what you're doing. Keep your head on the swivel. Keep the mace in the pocket and keep your own time ticking.
You're just mean, man.
You're just mean. So love the voicemail. And this happens every time you do the movie reference thing. So she is exactly right. That's what you were thinking about.
Right.
What's so funny was as soon as we got done recording the episode, you instantly remembered the movie.
Yeah.
And you told me what it was, the whole everything about it, Mel Gibson, Payback. But the other thing that always happens is I get a whole slew of emails. Some people saying it's Payback, but I've also received three or four other movies.
Sure. Yeah.
With a line that says you're mean or you're just mean. So, but it was Payback. That's the one you were thinking about.
That's the one that was in my mind.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. It's Vicky from Hull in the UK. I wanted to leave a voicemail for ages, and I decided today is the day. All your UK voicemails are always from really eloquent southern people. So I thought I would give you an insight into a northern Yorkshire accent. I've just finished the Anthony Kirkland episode. I've started all the way from the beginning, and I absolutely adore the podcast. I really, really do. You're both amazing, but I am defo Team Fergie, but I love you too, Gibby. Anyway, just wanted to leave you a quick message. message. So stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Really like that Northern Yorkshire accent.
You just say accent in a different way,
yeah.
And you think that's going to emulate
absolutely
her sound?
Yeah.
No, I like hearing the different accents, especially in the UK, because I'll be completely honest. Before you and I started doing this podcast, before we started getting voicemails and really hearing from a lot of people over there, I didn't realize that the accents were so varied.
Yeah, you thought they sounded just like Hugh Grant.
Pretty much like they are here in the United States, right? Different parts of the country, people sound differently, and obviously it's the same over there.
Yeah.
Now, where's the Peaky Blinders accent come from?
More of like a Scottish accent, I think, right? Irish, Scottish?
Well, the show's set in England, so I don't know.
Yeah. Didn't know either. Great Britain.
But you just said it's more of a Scottish-Irish accent. Okay.
It is, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, something like that.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that because I think you're wrong.
Go ahead and say it, too. I know you're really happy that, you know, she's Team Fergie.
Well, we don't get a lot of them, so, yeah, I'll take them.
We don't get a lot of them? You?
I don't get a lot of them.
Yes, you do.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. Valerie here from Poughkeepsie, New York. Wanted to give you a shout-out and say I enjoy listening all the time. I travel a lot for work, and you keep me company in the car. I have to say, Team Gibby, you're both wonderful, but Gibby has a nice laugh, so I have to go with that. A suggestion would for the future would be Kendall Francois, the Poughkeepsie killer, confessed to killing 8 sex workers in between 1996 and 1998. Very interesting story. Keep your own time ticking. Thanks.
Poughkeepsie. I like that. Poughkeepsie.
You just like saying it? Or?
I like saying it. It's fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure what you were going for there, but yeah, that case is definitely on the list, and it's a very interesting case. I probably need to move it up because I've thought about doing it a couple of times. I think I even worked on it a little bit once, and then I kind of put it aside.
Right.
Went on to something else. It happens to me all the time.
You do.
But I'll get back to it.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. My name's Adam. Long time listener, first time caller. Love your podcast. Love the relationship you guys have going. The back and forth is great. I used to live in a town named Galesburg, Illinois, and there's a story I haven't heard a lot of people cover, so I figured I'd tell you about it, maybe a little bit anyway. His name is Antonio Santa Maria. He decided that he didn't want to get a divorce, we'll put it that way. And I figured I might tell you that. Maybe you can take a look into it and see if you guys like to air it at some point. Until then, stay safe and keep your own time ticking. Thank you.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds fascinating. I actually like it when sometimes they don't give all the details because I'm very intrigued. Now I want to go find out.
Yeah.
And you know me, once I start looking into it, chances are we'll probably do it sooner than later.
Good teaser.
Yeah, good teaser. All right, buddy, we had nothing in the mailbag. So that's it.
Okay.
For another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike.
And Gibby.
Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.